Hello, everyone, and welcome to another Small Screen Star Wars. As always, I am Julian Musha. I'm joined by Rachel Wilkinson.
Hello.
And we are here to talk about Andor Season 1, Episode 8, Narkeena 5. And, you know, get ready for the most exciting game of Flora's Lava you have ever seen.
Pretty much, eh?
Yeah. So we'll get into this in just a moment. I'll just remind everyone to follow us on Twitter at Tower Babblecast, facebook.com/TowerBabblecast, and head over to our website, towerofbabble.ca, to find everything that we do. And if you want to help support the show, patreon.com/TowerBabblecast as well. All right. We're going to go through this in the same kind of format we have for the last couple of weeks. So I broke it into an Andor segment, an ISB Cyril segment, and a Mon Mothma and a Ferrix / Luthen segment. So,
okie doke.
We'll break it down like that. This is written by Bo Willmon, which, to be honest, sounds like a Star Wars name.
I mean, that's just because of Bo-Katan, but yeah.
Well, yeah. Well, I think anything like you get the one syllable first name,
yeah,
and that you'll automatically sound like a Star Wars name. And
that's fair.
Directed by Toby Haynes, who directed the previous episode as well. And by the way, you know, we talked about episode formats for the season, and this episode is, I think, back into a three-part arc, whereas the previous episode was like a break from it. So we did the first three, mm-hmm. and the second three, we got to six. Episode seven, they said, was like a interstitial episode, kind of stitches everything together. And then we're back into another three-episode arc. This will take us to what, 8, 9, 10. And then there's a two-episode arc to end the season. So
sweet.
That's the breakdown. By the way, also, before we get into the scene-by-scene breakdown here, Tales of the Jedi dropped the same
yeah.
day. Have you watched them all?
I have.
So I think we should do a special on it.
Yeah.
Maybe early next week, maybe over the weekend.
I'm down.
We'll see. And if not, we'll just sprinkle in some stuff over these Andor episodes. But I will just say, I was a big fan. Once again, the animation took another step forward at Lucasfilm.
Yeah, yeah.
It's absolutely stunning. I saw some people say that there was some retcons that happened in the as part of that. And that is true, but largely speaking, none of that bothers me. I don't know. Were you annoyed by some of that?
I was bummed. Yeah. Okay. I liked every single one of those episodes. Like, okay, I should rephrase. I very much liked them all. They were all very good. The very last one, I like.
That's the Ahsoka, like, on her own one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the one where there's like a, for me, there's a lot of retconning. From the book. So it's very similar to the book, but it's like the same story, but like very, very condensed with like mm-hmm. some less interesting stuff. Like there's just more interesting stuff in the book that's removed. So I'm like,
well,
if you're going to like bring that story back, then like, why not? Like, I don't know, just leave the book the way, I don't know. Yeah, we'll get into it maybe another time.
It's like, I guess, I suppose. I mean, I haven't read the book in a while.
But they was all very good.
I
really like that book.
It is
there's
good.
Just like, there's only a few things that like kind of like just bum me out a little bit about it, but they kept a lot of it. So I'm like, okay, so I guess that story is like still pretty much the same, just slightly different. I don't know.
Yeah.
Enough to bug me, but.
That story was already being tweaked, right? Like there was already things that we knew, you know, from the final season of Clone Wars that didn't line up with what we saw.
Kind of.
There's a really cool moment.
I don't know.
At the early in that episode where they go to Padme's funeral, that was really cool.
Yeah, that was cool. That was the only one that I was like, whatever. But
The rest of it is basically a Dooku anthology, right? Following Dooku's fall from grace. And honestly, I thought that was really cool.
Very cool. I liked that a lot.
I'll read my tweet here, which basically says, somehow every single episode of The Tales of the Jedi feels potent and thoughtful. There isn't a loser in the bunch.
Yeah.
I'm particularly impressed by how they found compelling stories in the spaces in between moments we already know so well. Never mind the continued stellar animation. Bravo. So, mm-hmm. I really loved these little kind of in-between moments, like when we see Dooku erase the files for Kamino at the Jedi Temple. You know, these kind of small moments. I like how we find out what happens to Yaddle. No spoilers.
Yeah, definitely.
So like, I do find it odd that it's never talked about, but I guess the timing of it is there's a big jump between episode one and episode two. So I guess
like 10 years
about that would have happened between that time. Obviously great seeing Clone Wars era Obi-Wan hair in animation form. That's always fun to see.
There's lots to talk about.
Yeah. Anyway, we don't have time to dive into that. I'll just say that I was a big fan. Sounds like you were a big fan.
Yes, I liked 99% of it.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like more like 90% of it, but yeah. We'll dive into it more when we get.
Yeah,
to
exactly. But
we'll see how they continue it. I mean, obviously, it's an anthology series, so there's lots of room to do different things. I did find it odd that mm-hmm. they released it at the same time as Andor was airing. So I'm not sure what the deal was with that, but I'm fine. I guess whatever. I had a nice evening watching a bunch of Star Wars stuff.
Me too. I liked it.
Yeah. All right. Let's get into Andor. Overall thoughts on this episode, Rachel?
Yeah, there was just so much going on in this episode, I found. Like there's lots going on, but there's also, okay, how do I word this? Mm-hmm. I feel like there's a lot going on, but also not a lot going on at the same time.
Yes, this is a criticism that the show, that people have been levying at the show, which is that it's like,
okay,
it's very slow paced, mm-hmm. but, you know, intentionally so. And so
yes.
For me, it's not a problem for me, but I can see why it could be frustrating for someone who's
right,
you know, from who's used to traditional Star Wars storytelling, which is much more, you know, wham bam, action packed, quips being thrown around, that kind of thing. This is not mm-hmm. that at all, and it hasn't been really at all from the beginning, right? So tonally, it's completely different, but it's doing it intentionally. Like it's not like the pacing is off, in my opinion. It's slow. It's deliberate. It's building tension. Every episode is this like one step up the rung on the ladder, and it's towards this destination that we kind of already know, but there's all these little pieces that fall into place, the individual elements that we're seeing, you know, Dedra moving slow, like the ISB closing in, the Empire kind of mm-hmm. tightening its grip, how that's affecting the individual people, the views of the elites, all that kind of stuff is kind of coalescing together in this really interesting kind of stew. Star Wars stew, it's a slow, it takes a while to cook, to come all the flavors to kind of come out. Mm-hmm. But for me, it's totally working. I see why people might be bored of the show. I've seen a couple of people be like, I want to love it, but it's boring. It's so
interesting.
It's like, I get it.
I get it with maybe like, it depends where your interests lie in the Star mm-hmm. Wars universe. Like, I think it's really cool. Like, I liked seeing this whole like prison side of things. Like, you see a little bit of it in like some of the comics and whatnot, but like it's just cool looking at the different like Star Wars prisons and what they do there and how it works. And I like kind of seeing that world building and like those kind of different aspects of the Empire.
It's the mechanics and then, of the world building is so thoughtful. I was reading tweets and, you know, coalescing ideas and thoughts, and you know, one of the kind of the themes that I think is really stands out about the show is that for the first time in a long time, I think, for Star Wars, the original trilogy did a really great job of this. The prequel trilogy, not so much. Some of the shows, varying degrees. But making the world feel like a real place, that things mm-hmm. are happening, even when you're not watching it, right? That there's real people having real conversations, and it's not all pomp and circumstance, you know.
No.
This happened because the script demanded it. It all feels naturalistic. And it makes you really want to stick your head in the screen, like look left and right and be like, what's going on over there? And like, what's going around this corner? Right. Like, because you feel like, it feels like there's real things around those corners where, you know, mm-hmm. in Obi-Wan, it feels like if you stepped off the set, you know, you'd fall into a studio somewhere. Right. And again, I like that show for its kind of character moments, but from a production design and world building standpoint, it failed almost entirely. So, I'm just blown away by how kind of put together this all is. You know.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's get into this breakdown. So, let's start with Andor. This episode is really does this really interesting thing where it kind of shows the dichotomy between the life of the Imperials and the elites. I mean, we're talking about Mon Mothma and her cocktail party, and talking about these. And by the way, there's an episode of Tales of the Jedi that handles this as well, that touches on this. But I think the second one, and then also, of course, how things are happening, you know, on the ground for everyday people, and specifically Andor, who's now in the system, right?
Right.
That, you know, it requires laborers, and we'll talk about why and all that kind of stuff, and yada yada. But it just it cuts back and forth because it's designed, I think, to show you, you know, the stark differences between the way these people are being treated and the way that these people are being treated.
And, absolutely, yeah.
So that's interesting. So we start by seeing that Andor is being escorted off his Space Miami vacation spot to a transport by shore troopers. I mean, the way that they're showing that the stormtroopers feels much more, we talked about this last episode, more real, much scarier. These shore troopers are pushing them around. He continues to insist he's a tourist, but they continue to not care. He's assigned to a transport leaving for Narkeena 5, which, you know, you do the thing where you point at the screen. Oh, that's the name of the episode.
And, yeah.
A planet he's never heard of, and he starts freaking out a little bit. And again, the protests don't help. He's put on the transport and sent away. On the transport, he's ordered to remove his shoes and socks, to go barefoot. You get these cool magnet cuffs. These are all kind of quick stitched together, kind of, again, jumping back and forth, but we'll stick with Andor. The transport arrives on the planet, which is actually a moon over what looks like a gas giant of some kind, which is unfortunate because this all takes place inside these prisons, but it looks like the view from the planet of the gas giant itself would have been pretty cool. So,
oh yeah,
maybe we'll get to see that later. We see some really cool establishing shots of the mostly what looks like a mostly watery world, with these hexagonal structures that seem to descend into the water, and even has these cool whirlpools that are going around it. I mean, this
those are neat.
Kind of allusions to Rogue One, where you kind of were introduced to all these new Imperial designs and devices and facilities that all felt like they fit perfectly into the established Imperial era. And this is another example of that. It feels like, okay, yeah, that's totally makes sense as being an Imperial established place. It's got the gray, flat gray colors. It looks like a piece of the Death Star kind of planted into the water without kind of the pomp and circumstance of kind of Vader's castle Inquisitorius,
well, yes,
or, you know, whatever. So
I feel like too, it's like it's going along that same theme of like the Imperials loving to like take a place that's really like cool and beautiful and then just putting something like that doesn't really fit in it.
Yes.
And it's like, well, oh, look at this really beautiful. Yeah. Look at this beautiful like ocean world and like how gorgeous it is. And you know what we're going to put in here? A prison where you're never going to see the light of day. And it's just like that little extra bit of like torture. Like, you know, we're not going to put this on like a desert planet. We're not going to put it on like a big snow planet where you don't care. It's like, you know, you put it somewhere else. Right? Probably. Yeah. Yeah. I would assume, but still, it's just kind of like one of those things where it's not like a big, ugly, murky. Yeah.
Everything's
not a big, ugly, murky water, but yeah. But again, it's just like
for style, you know?
No, and it's just like, oh, here's another ugly compound in the middle of this like beautiful nature.
It alludes to that kind of like the brutalist design, which is just
yes,
like,
it's exactly
pure for function. No style at all. So
no,
they arrive at the facility. And we first time we hear this kind of concept of on program, which is used over and over again, which just means that you have to stand with your feet apart, hands above your head. And I love this moment where as the transport leaves and you kind of get this brief shot of the outside and it looks really cool. You get this one guy telling, hey, breathe deep, brother. This might be the last fresh air we ever breathe. And it's like, it's just like a really cool way to show the like severity of kind of what they've gotten themselves into, you know?
Yeah.
So turns out it's an Imperial factory facility. And we meet the kind of the head honcho guy. And what is it called when you're the leader of a prison? You're a
warden?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess he's the warden probably. And so he has this like whole preset speech. You know, your length of stay is predetermined, but the quality of the stay is up to you. And they kind of talk about their minimally invasive techniques, which I don't know how you define minimally invasive, but shocking someone with extreme voltage doesn't seem minimally invasive to me.
Yeah. To me, that just means it's like, oh, like you're not actually going to see Imperial officers very often. Like it's just like, and you know, we see that throughout everything. It's like you don't actually see the officers. They don't interact with these prisoners really at all after. So, which, you know what I think? It's because I don't think there's a lot of officers there. I think there's only a few. And that's probably like they can't, they don't have the manpower to actually watch all these prisoners. So they need to find a different way to handle them all because they don't have the people to do it. So,
well, Andor is clocking that too, right? And they've,
he's 100% clocking it.
Well, and there's that next scene where he's being led into the facility and you see there's like one person's missing. He's on another floor. So he's like, okay, they don't have enough people for every floor. They've weaponized the people against each other, right? So they have these four managers who are the, you know, keeping order, quote unquote, amongst the prisoners, but it's only because they don't have enough people. I think it's a great point. Cause I didn't write that down. And then you got this kind of computerized voice, right?
Mm-hmm.
On program. It's so cool, by the way. I just think it's like a cool sounding thing. Very spooky. It's a really, again, just like everything in the show, everything about how they introduce this facility, the way that they show Andor being treated and then the people within feels real. I saw that the Screen Crush people compared it to Shawshank Redemption. I could see some comparisons there. Great movie, obviously. It just all feels, nothing feels like an accident, what they're showing you here. Right?
No.
Yeah. So the whole deal is that they got an electrified floor that they can turn on at any time with three settings. It seems like presumably the third setting will kill you. So
I assume so. From what we see later on, I assume. Right.
And I guess, which also seems intense, it's like, do we really need to set the floor next to the cells, which have no railings, with... a death setting? Is that really necessary? Like, it seems like setting one is like already enough to prevent anyone from moving. So
exactly,
I don't know, seems over like overkill, but you know, leave it to the Empire to be overkill. Cool concept. What do you think of this kind of this idea for facility?
Yeah, I like it, and it's definitely very interesting, and it's like, okay, yeah, they're all barefoot and the guards all wear like their nice big moon boots and I feel like I'm trying to think of this. I don't know what it's reminding me of, but it's reminding me of like another similar like prison escape thing where the guards, I don't know, are like also have to wear like heavy, is it Guardians?
No.
I don't know, is it Guardians of the Galaxy?
You're thinking of Face Off.
Okay, that's what I'm thinking of. Yeah, I was like, what's the other one? It's Face Off.
Remember, they have the magnetized boots.
Yes, that's what it is. It's Face Off. Yeah, you're right. That's exactly what it is. Yeah, you know, the number one movie ever made.
I also thought about the magnetized boots from Solo, where they're doing the kind of got a similar design. Kind of just look like Sorrel snow boots that they've been painting.
They do. Or like ski boots, like like old retro 80s ski boots. But it's like, it's a very interesting concept, and it makes sense. It's a simple way to keep people contained, and it's a simple way to keep like riots and that kind of stuff from happening when you don't have enough guards to actually run a prison.
So many people, right? When we see the hallway, and you see there's seven floors, and each of those, I mean, there's seven rooms on each floor. And seven tables, and each has seven people. So we could do the math. You want to do seven times seven?
No. It's 49 people per room times seven rooms, right?
And then seven floors.
Times seven floors is
2,401 people.
And one people, So 2,400 people, and there's probably like, I don't know, maybe a dozen guards that run this whole place.
Right. Well, maybe slightly more than that. Maybe like... I mean, I don't know. Maybe two dozen, like a day shift and a night shift or something.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like they definitely don't have enough if there's a riot. So right. You need to have some way to like control these people. So yeah, it's a very like futuristic sci-fi like way of making a prison.
So how do you think they escape?
This is going to be one of those things where it's like, I don't know. They're either going to steal a pair of moon boots or I don't know. I guess. Yeah, he's probably going to figure out something. Because he's Cassian, some way to like make the floor stop working, or, I guess we'll see. He's gonna find the hole in how they run things when it's either when they're bringing in a new person or because what is it? Pretty much, I think the only time the guards really interact with them is when they're either when they're bringing somebody in or taking somebody out. Exactly. Yeah. So probably during one of those things, but we shall see. Unless there's some kind of prison break because they figure out he's there. And they
well, that's
him,
the thing. But... So what's interesting is that like Dedra's looking for Andor, right?
Yes, yeah.
But he's already in their custody. I find that concept.
Yeah, under a different name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. But his picture is the same. You'd think you'd just
anyway. Yeah.
It's a fun dynamic where it's like there's this kind of cat and mouse game where the mouse is already in a trap, but not the one that the mouse thinks, you know?
Yeah, not the right one.
Yeah. So back at the facility, Andor has changed into his new uniform. He's threatened by a bunch of kind of power-hungry jerks who like to push people around. He's getting confusing orders. Go, stop. Don't move. Go forward. He's like, okay, guys, relax. So he's taking this all in. We're saying he's kind of clocking the disorganization. We hear that computer voice for the first time we talked about. He's led into his working floor, which is Unit 5-2-D. Which, you know, is floor 5, room 2, day shift. And anyway, he's on table 5 as well. They have 12-hour shifts, which, of course, because it would make sense if they were any less than that. It's actually, fact, I'm surprised it's not longer, to be honest.
Yeah. I saw 18.
And this is where we meet Andy Serkis, who's back. And listen, they might have announced that Andy Serkis was going to be in the show, but I had no recollection of that at all. And when he showed up, I was like, what the hell? What a surprise. I was shocked by seeing Andy Serkis here. What was your reaction?
I didn't know who he was until my partner explained him to me. Is he in Star Wars though before?
Yes, he's.
Okay. See, I didn't know that.
He plays, the guy who gets cut in half in, The Last Jedi, right? Snoke himself. He's the voice of Snoke.
Oh, he plays Snoke. Okay. Okay, so he's not like, his face isn't recognizable, though. Am I supposed to know this character?
I think he's become much more famous as of late. I mean, he came to prominence as Gollum in Lord of the Rings.
Gollum, that's what Adam was saying. He's like, oh, that's Gollum. I was like, what? What do you mean that's Gollum?
Yeah, and he's also Claw in the Black Panther movies. He's a villain in those. He's played more live action roles recently. He's also most recently in The Batman. He plays Alfred in that.
Interesting.
So he's a good actor.
I like him in this role too.
Yeah. He's so good here. So his voice is just so distinct and threatening and stuff. I mean,
he does
sound a lot like Snoke, but you know.
I didn't pick up on that.
He's not cloned yet, so it's fine. Maybe they use some of his DNA. all right, so his name is Kino Loy, and he's a real piece of shit. He's got 249 days left on his sentence, so he's trying to make sure that things go smoothly so he can get out. And, you know, as is mentioned later in the episode, don't look at the clock. They keep you as long as they need you. It's not about how long your actual sentence is. But he's motivated to keep his room moving slowly. You know, when he's talking about the way everything works, it's really interesting how he talks about how, you know, he uses the word play. He's like, you play against the rest of the tables and I play against the rest of the rooms. And Andrew's like, play. It's like, whatever, call it whatever you want. He's kind of self-deluded himself into believing that this is all a game.
To keep yourself from going insane.
But. Right. Well, and he also mentions that too. He's like, listen, if you're starting to lose it, just keep it to yourself.
Just like, I don't care. Yeah.
Right.
But I get it. Like, you're stuck there. You know you're going to be stuck there for, like, an insane amount of time. And you're just like, well, like, I'm going to be doing the same repetitive thing day after day after day. Like, the only way to make it at least interesting is if you make it, like, competitive. And if you make it, you know.
It's gamifying it. Yeah. It's
yeah.
But, I mean, and the way it works is, like, okay, the top table gets to taste their food, which is a crazy concept.
Gets
and then
flavor.
The best of everyone gets flavor, and it's like, what does that even mean? I don't even know what that means. Is taste and flavor, are those different concepts?
Because I guess taste isn't necessarily good or bad. It's just like, oh, it has a taste. Like, it doesn't just taste like nothing.
So it tastes like, okay, bad, and then if you add flavor, it can be taste good.
Yeah, it's like, okay, then maybe it's like kind of bland, but it's like, oh, there's a hint of something there, and it's like, oh yeah, no, you actually get, like, you know, it's chicken flavor.
It's probably bug juice, like bug.
Ugh, from bugs, well, just like in typical, like the Jedi's when they would just eat that, like those protein sticks.
Yes,
like just the whatever portions of food. So it's just like bland, tasteless, like garbage, nutrient slop.
Tube
that comes out of a tube.
Right.
Yeah. You just suck it out of a tube on the wall. I'm like, oh God, that's miserable.
Yeah, but at the same time, convenient if you just need a food replacement, right?
Yeah, I guess so. It's like thick water.
Yeah, he's got regular water and thick water. That's So we meet his table and we meet all the people at the table. Now, the only real person that's of any interest here is... Any guesses?
Are you asking me?
Yes, I'm asking you. Yeah.
The ginger one. I don't know.
Melshi. Melshi. He's the one with the buzz cut.
Oh, right. Yes. Melshi. Yes. Because he's one of...
he's in
Saw's
Rogue
guys,
one.
Right?
Yes, he's in.
Oh, is
he?
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. So he's actually with Andor, that I think most of that movie, but he doesn't have much lines. So it's interesting that we're kind of fleshing out that character too. I think that's really interesting.
Yeah.
So they're all chatting about how they need to get their table out of last place and if they'll be given any leeway for being a man down. He's like, they should, but he won't. Right. I just like the way that their banter feels so kind of like, again, naturalistic and feels genuine for how a team dynamic like that would work, you know?
Yes, yeah.
And then just as they're about to, like, they only have like half an hour left in their shift, and they're called, they get a sprint shift, which reminds me of I guess not me personally, but I know the developers at our job, at my job, they work in sprints, right? So you do in the agile development methodology. You set a goal and then you work over a sprint, which is like a couple of weeks worth of work, to achieve an end goal. So I just think it's interesting how they use, and there's the show does this a lot where it uses kind of like organizational, kind of like corporate speech as a shorthand. It's just interesting. I think it's cool.
Yeah, no, that's,
Anyway, the last place table gets disciplined, which I guess just means they get shocked an undisclosed amount of time. Do you think it causes any permanent damage to their like organs?
I mean, if you're gonna get shocked over and over, probably, like, it can't be good for your literal brain to get shocked like that. That's, I'm sure, true. It probably causes like heart attacks and things like that, like, I'm sure people die from it all the time.
I guess they talk about people dying regularly, so I guess that makes sense. So we talked about this already a little bit, but the prisoners are lined up in a hallway. Andor sees a guy doing kind of hand signals, sign language, with inmates in the hallways across the facility. So that's pretty cool. We get a cool look at the interior with water flowing down the walls, different levels. It's huge. It's really very super cool to look at.
Yeah. Again, massive.
The CG of this show and the way it shows these structures and imperial designs. Very cool. So in their cells, they have a hose for water and hose for food or thick water. They have a flip out toilet. And a little handy dandy day counter, right? And so that's interesting. But again, I like how the guy's like, don't look at it. It's not worth it. And then they start asking about how, if he knows anything about the PORD initiative. They're like, you know, everyone's counter was doubled, you know, last week or whatever. You know, did you know anything about it? And people must be talking about it, right? Andor plays dumb, right? But again, this is an example of how he's being shown the consequences of his action. I heard someone mention this interesting point, which is that if he had just gone with the Empire, with the Rebellion originally, he wouldn't have gotten in this mess. It's because he was selfish and wanted to get out. And by the way, he has none of that money back. He has it's all gone now, right? He lost all of his money.
Is it gone or is it?
Well, it's above that shower. So
yeah, it's hidden in that shower. So I mean, I don't know. Yeah. You know, it's Star Wars. He'll go back and find it. It'll be there.
Maybe. Or
that chick has it.
We start talking about the greeny greeny ones.
Lady. Yeah. What?
The greeny greeny ones, right? She says.
Yes,
those.
Yeah, exactly.
What was I saying? Right. I mean, what we're seeing here is Andor being radicalized into the Empire or into the rebellion, right?
Absolutely.
The Empire. And just interesting to see it kind of literally happen kind of in front of your eyes. There's a mention of like, I hope you don't walk in your sleep. And then
yeah, you
like,
don't sleepwalk, right? Yeah.
Right. Jeez. And then we catch up with, we find out later that someone kills himself by electrocuting themselves on the floor. And they said they railed themselves, which I think is a cool
kind
of concept. It, this kind of internal lingo. I guess it's supposed to be like related to like the third rail, like of like a subway or whatever.
Maybe. Yeah. I didn't really like understand that. I mean, we don't have subways where I live.
Yeah. Turns out that's like, handy. It'd be really handy if we had one.
I blame the rivers here.
The rivers are, you build them below the rivers. It's not a problem.
I didn't know you could do that. So,
well,
that's true. Because isn't there like a whole road that goes under lakes? Yeah, you're right. Okay, fair enough.
Yeah. They built a whole
Star
tunnel
Wars
that goes under
okay.
the English Channel.
Yeah.
Anyway, this isn't Star Wars. I'm in Sydney now. I'm moving all around. I was just in Brisbane. They also have a rapid transit system. Like Corridor is built just for buses. So
oh, okay.
I thought that was interesting. But obviously, of course, there's a subway system here and light rail and all that stuff. I'm really jealous of convenient public
transit.
They also have in Brisbane on the river, because they have a river that winds through the city. They have like a regularly running ferries between different spots on the river. How convenient would that be if we had that?
We have that here.
No, we don't.
We have the water taxi.
It's not reliable enough. It's too expensive. It's not frequent enough. Like, it needs to be frequent, otherwise it doesn't work. Yeah, anyway.
Hold up. It's like what, $5 to take it here, if that?
Yeah.
And it takes you across the river? That's not that expensive.
You're a whiner. That's a lot. It's $2 more than a bus, and it goes half as fast, and it's not reliable. It doesn't arrive on time. They're not frequent enough, and they don't go. And it doesn't. It goes like to four stops, and that's it. It's not. It should be. There should be probably five times as many of those,
and they should go
the whole length of the city. In my opinion, or at least most.
I love how we derail this conversation from Star Wars suicide to the river taxis in Manitoba being too expensive.
Well, and they don't run long enough. Their season's so short. It's like,
well, yeah, because it freezes.
Well, yeah, but then, okay, well, then put a big, you can, there's other methods, there's other things you could do. I don't,
you kill me. I'm dying.
Anyway,
this is the part where people stop listening to us. Sorry, everybody.
Yeah, anyway, back to Star Wars. The final shot of the episode ends with Andor. We have other stuff to cover, but the final shot of the episode ends with Andor on another working shift. There's another part where he's after 30 days. We cut to like a month later, and we see this weird space shower. They're kind of in the swing of things now. Well-oiled machine, right?
Biggest shirtless scene in Star Wars history.
Just a bunch of dudes without shirts on.
Yeah. Oh, and doesn't those showers look so gross though to you that it like they just get like barely misted? And I was like, that looks like it sucks. Yeah, it's just like, oh, I don't know. That bugged me the most out of like all the prison things. And I was like, the fact that you can't like have a shower would drive me insane.
Yeah, like me too. And it's like, maybe it's like special space mist that like cleans you more.
I guess it's probably like, you know, like those decontamination mists or something. But I was just like, ooh. The music here was really cool too. It's very like synth, retro kind of like sci-fi. I don't know. I was getting like just like, I don't know, sci-fi prison vibes. It's kind of cool. So like very, I don't know, almost like Stranger Things. But
actually, you know what? That's a good sign. I mean, that is synth too. And I love this Stranger Things music. So no, you're not going to hear any complaints from me. Anyway, it's cool watching them work as kind of a team. Andor is a natural leader. So, you know, within a month, they're already kind of gone from, you know, worst to first, basically.
Yeah, and getting some taste with their food.
What do you think that they're making here?
It looks, I don't know. I was like Death Star parts, but
yeah, probably, right? I mean,
I mean, honestly, or like TIE fighter, like something, because they're big, like
right, or something. I don't know, a walker, or you know,
yeah, like for me, you know, war things, but
yeah, military.
I'm sure. I'm not sure, but maybe we'll see, like later on, down the line, like what these things are for. But yeah, because they're just like they're building the same thing over and over again, but.
The whole point is that it doesn't matter what it is. It's the same thing over and over again. It's probably Death Star parts. And it kind of, if it is, I hope it is, because it ties Andor further into this kind of the Death Star story, right? About how his planet was probably mined for resources that helped build the gas seems to be similar to the gas that they used to kill the Geonosians. Then you've got him being associated with this, you know, now he's in this prison, and then eventually he gets to steal the plans to destroy the whole thing, and it kind of intertwines with his whole life. So I think thematically that would be cool. Again, what specifically they are doesn't really matter.
No, but it's like, obviously they need all these different, because everyone's like, well, how would they even build the Death Star that fast? And it's like, well, because there's like all these prisoners and all these complexes like everywhere. Probably building parts for it and
being arrested
for whatever,
literally nothing, so that they can be thrown into, you know,
getting 6 years for nothing. Exactly. So, you're like, well, right here, this is how.
So, let's go to the ISB. We start the episode catching up with Cyril, who's now wearing the standard gray suit. He's kind of a cog in his own machine now, and he's surprised when Imperial agents come to collect him at his office space cubicle. Dedra. So this is where I think the show is really starting to really click for me, because Dedra's like circling in on all these kind of larger pieces that we've been kind of following for the whole, you know, we're at episode 8 now, and we've been following these different pieces this whole time, and they're slowly starting to come together, right? So you know, that includes with stuff on Ferrix. You got people on Ferrix that weren't on Ferrix before, and you've got these kind of larger stuff that's all coalescing. So he's brought in front of Dedra, who introduces herself as the supervisor from the Morlana sector. He's surprised that Blevin is not with them anymore. She has always apparently been planning to call him in for questioning on the events on Ferrix, but this all happened sooner because he kept on filing false reports through his fuel purity arm of his Bureau of Standards position. 6 false inquiries. He's only been there a month. And he's just like a dog on a bone, right? He just wants to find Andor. Yeah. And she's like, oh, this is about public safety, which is, I think, so funny. And it really feels like it's very personal for him, as we talked about before.
Oh, super personal. Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like he always looks like he's about to either like faint or cry. Like the way
I think the crying is like, I feel like he's just so like worked up.
Yeah.
He just wants to like scream, right?
Yeah. Like he's on the verge of like angry tears at all times. Yeah.
Yes. So he, quote, engaged the curiosity of the ISB, and he wants to clear his name.
Mm-hmm.
Dedra wants to know what was missing from Blevin's report, but he has never read it despite having been forced to sign it.
Which I think
is another example of kind of Imperial oversight of and they're kind of what's the word I'm looking for here? They're
failings.
They're just really smug, right? They don't need it doesn't matter, right? If what is written in the report is accurate, as long as it looks like it's been cleaned up, you know. So Dedra's team is concerned about the timing. I guess it's an important day. It seems like they're implying that they're going to be making that presentation to Wolf Ilaren, so they don't really have time to deal with this, but that's interesting. So Dedra does make that presentation to Wolf. And interesting seeing that he's more involved. He doesn't have much to say. He just really seems like he's just sitting there listening and he's just like, harumph.
Yeah.
You know?
It's like he's like distracted reading something else.
Yeah. Do you think the guy who was playing Wolfie Lauren watched any of the previous Wolfie Lauren stuff from Clone Wars?
I mean, I don't know. It just depends on the actor, right? Like, it's just like how the, what's his name? Not Rupert. Is it Rupert Grint who plays the Inquisitor?
That's not the right name, but I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
All right. Well, yeah. It's just like he didn't watch. Yeah. He didn't watch any of it to like see. And sometimes that shit bugs me, but I'm like, I get it. You want to put your own like acting.
Yeah, but it is the same. But the same character.
Yeah. I feel like you should still. Yeah. Anyway. For consistency reasons. But yeah, I don't know. I just don't know if that's like a big enough character for someone to like need to watch.
I'm still not convinced that the Grand Inquisitor isn't just a different Grand Inquisitor and he'll just be murdered and replaced by someone else. So
yeah, I don't know.
I'm still kind of sticking to that theory a little bit. Anyway, or at least replaced by the one that that we're familiar with. So yeah, I mean, to me, Wolfie Lauren's a big deal, but to most Star Wars fans, I'm guessing it's kind of like not a big deal. But anyway, I'm geeked out when he's on screen. So she's making this big presentation to Wolf and talking about the Star Path unit and its ties to the larger rebellion. She name checks Andor, mentions Luthen with the code name Axis because he's close to the center of all this rebel activity. And we actually see how that plays out with Luthen making a trip to see Saw Gerrera later in the episode.
Mm-hmm.
She wants a full planetary comnet, full garrison tech package, Series 9 spectrum surveillance, local agent funding, code droid. I just love it. It's just a bunch of gobbledygook, but it all sounds really cool.
So, yeah.
Down for a tech talk, right? And then I found there's that really interesting exchange about the cost. You know, it's just like, he's like, it's expensive. She's like, well, it's, you know, fraction of the cost of lost equipment or whatever falling into rebel hands. And then
right. It's
kind of like this challenge to Yularen. And there's a little bit of kind of like a stare down for a second. Mm-hmm. That's like, oh, did you just talk back to me? But then
yeah,
Parnkast
right?
Like, takes her side. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. He's like, oh, okay. Yeah. Just trying to like at least, or like, oh, not over explain for her, but like kind of step in there and be like, oh yeah, no, like, makes sense.
I agree. He's basically saying,
yes.
He's like saying, listen, she's not just overreaching. You know, I've reviewed the work. It's sound, right? That's interesting as well. So they want to find Andor and get a hunt started. But again, hilarious because they already have him.
Yeah.
So after we cut back to Cyril, Cyril has read the report. He's dismayed by how much is missing from it. Dedra wants to know, he's like, okay, cool. I kind of already inferred all those things, but it's good for you to confirm it. And Dedra wants to know about Luthen. But I find this mm-hmm. part so interesting. He wants to be helpful, but he doesn't have anything to add, right?
No.
Like, he's like a gray, green cloak, boots. It's
yeah.
like, oh, good. Yeah, nice. Good.
Yeah, the color like, of his cloak's good real going to help.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
I do love the whole thing about, I don't know, not that it's like often in Star Wars, but often in like media in general, where it's like, I would remember their voice. Cause it's like, that's the only way that really going to have for him to like point fingers later is the voice. And it's like, I don't think Luthen really has like that distinct.
I disagree. We're talking about Stalin Starsguard. Yeah, he has one of the most distinct, coolest voices in Hollywood.
I mean, absolutely. He does have a cool voice, but like, I don't know. I'm just like, in
how
terms
many people
of
Star Wars have a Nordic accent? Answer that.
No. That's true. But I just mean in terms of like how much. What's his name?
He didn't speak that much.
Yeah, like how much he heard him. I was like, doesn't all he say is like shoot him? That's about it. So I'm like,
yeah, that's true.
I don't know. I was like, how much did you really hear his voice? Like that you could.
Well, and again,
it
doesn't even matter. It's like he just wants to be involved. He'll say whatever he has to say to be involved.
I think it's so they can use it like later. I don't know, or maybe use it later. Right? They have to say that he'd be able to recognize him somehow. So
right,
yeah, but he is so desperate to like help.
Yeah, so. Dedra's basically like, okay, thanks for the help. Stop filing false reports and we'll say you did a good job today. And no yeah. one will worry about it. And then he's like, that's not good enough. I was a good inspector. I love this scene. I just love his kind of conviction here. And then this line, can one ever be too aggressive in preserving order? This is a theme that they touch on multiple times. We see with Mon Mothma. There's a lot of kind of weaving of themes throughout this episode. You know, there's a, you know, this kind of, they do this a couple times in the show where they'll use a line of dialogue and then they'll reuse it by someone else later in the episode where it's like, you know, we either grow or die. And it's like things either change or die in the last episode.
Right.
And then this one, it was like, I just noticed one that was like, oh, are you taking a breather? And then later someone's like, the Empire doesn't take a breather. Right.
Yes.
So
yes.
Kind of
yeah.
like these little, but the overall arching theme here is this idea of law and order. Right. And there's a great, you know, classic quote from the real world, which is like something along the lines of those who give up. What's the word I'm looking for? Give up liberty for security deserve neither liberty nor security.
Okay.
So anyway, this is the kind of a larger concept. I find it fascinating because I had a debate with a guy on Twitter today or last night about how, you know, Star Wars has gotten too political. And of course, hilarious because it's all.
What?
I know. Don't get into it. We don't have to get into it. We know that. But
that's really funny.
I think there's this kind of this concept in popular culture right now that, you know, these creators of these shows are trying to put messages in that relate to
right.
modern
oh,
day.
But
the
okay.
thing is, like,
I get it. It's hitting too close to home.
Exactly. I think what actually is happening is people are recognizing these similarities, but not because they're too on the nose. It's because, you know, when the shoe fits, you know,
and you're mad about it.
Oh, it's right. Exactly.
Yeah. It's like, it's really funny.
How dare they call that out in this, you know, this obvious allegory for totalitarianism, you know?
Yeah, like so. What? It's that's really funny.
Yeah.
That's just
so funny. Anyway. So he where was I? Oh yeah. So Cyril makes a play to stay involved in the investigation. And Deirdre's not really playing with that. She says, you know, if you raise the alarm one more time, it won't be me you'll be speaking to. Which I think is taken as a threat, but I think the way Cyril takes it is as like a challenge.
Yeah, I think so too. I was going to say that. Yeah. And I was like, the look on his face is like, oh, cool. So I can talk to somebody higher up then. Like, right. I feel like I'm like, he's like the worst person to say that to because he's just going to be like, okay, well, I'm going to keep doing it and maybe I'll get to talk to the Emperor. Like, I feel like that's where his little like rat brain is going. And it's like,
I get to like talk to the Emperor. Right.
Yeah. Like what? Like what? And it's like, no. It's like, she means that like, she's a good person to talk to and she's going to listen to you, but the next person isn't. Like, the next person is going to be like, all right, well, like,
put up with your insolence. Yeah.
Yeah. Get out of here. Like, we don't need you in this job anymore, then. And you don't need to be like, you know, annoying the shit out of us with your.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, no, the look on his face is like, well, I'm going to keep trying and see who I get to talk to next. So,
yeah, because we're not done with Cyril, obviously.
No, he's still going to weasel around. Yeah. We'll see.
Yeah. All right, so that's the last of the ISB direct stuff. We catch up with them again later briefly, but we'll catch on that with the Ferrix stuff. So Mon Mothma, this is the stuff that's cross-cutting with the prison stuff, so just keep that in mind when you're cutting between these different parts of the scenes of and or learning the ways of this prison system and how these people are being treated. And then you have these politicians debating, quote-unquote, the merits of this PORD bill. And what's even funnier is that, of course, that the Imperial Senate is in itself ineffectual. It has no real power. So this is all just kind of like self-serving BS. But that's the cover. Mothma's doing her own work here. So it's another cocktail party at her house. She refuses to drink a traditional Trendrillan squid drink called Squigs.
That grossed me out. I hated that scene.
isn't it kind of like the worm in tequila though? You know?
No, it immediately made me want to barf. Like, granted, yeah, I don't know.
That's the point. That's what Tay says later to her daughter. It's gross. Yeah. It's like, yeah, that's the whole point.
That's one of those like stupid like rich people things where it's like, oh, it's distinguished if you like it because it's disgusting. Like, right. I don't know.
Are you thinking of like caviar or something?
Yeah, like caviar and things that are like fancy because they're gross. And it's like, no one like likes that for real. Like if that were like a cheap... I
mean, what did you think about escargot?
No, listen though. If it were cheap, people wouldn't like it. Like if you were like, here's these bugs that you could eat for 50 cents, you'd be like, no, that's gross. I'm not eating that. But when we're like, oh, we baked them in cheese and a mushroom shell and now they're $18, you're like, yep, I will eat that.
Well, they probably taste better baked in cheese and a mushroom shell. So,
I mean, yeah. So, but yeah, I'm just anyway,
I know what you're saying. It's a status thing, right?
Yeah.
So Mothma refuses to drink. This, I guess she doesn't want to get drunk is the idea.
Yes.
Doesn't want cheers. The squig. Yeah. She cheers, which is, I guess they say Segrona for that. Mm-hmm. And they cheers to a quick night, which, he's more than fine. Her husband, more than fine to cheers to.
That is right up my alley. I'm going to start doing that.
Right.
Like, cheers to a quick night.
Yeah. Right. I'll cheers to that. And I love
friends with all of you, but get out by this time.
He's so funny because He's like, oh, she's got real work to do. You know, good luck feeding the galaxy. I'm going to go feed myself. Charity begins at home.
Ooh, such a dig. I loved it. Right, and then he turns around, gives him that little like side eye. It's like, I knew that was a insult. It's like,
yes,
that guy sucks. Yeah. And I just want to see them get divorced.
I think she's just going to leave him. Like, I don't think there's going to be a divorce.
I hope so. Adam, yeah, my partner there, we were watching it and he's like, oh, he's like, do you think... he's like, I think there's obviously something has to happen between them, but he's like, do you think it'll be something like how he finds out what she's doing and Mon kills him? And I was like, she's not that kind of she's not that kind of character, and she wouldn't do that because they have a daughter. Like, I just can't see her killing her child's father, right, even if he is like trying to like put her in jail or like do something. I was like, no, like
she has a good relationship with her daughter, but
no, she's not going to kill her daughter's
dad. That's also to protect her, right? So it's like, I think more likely she'll just abandon them, which
is
terrible
for their own safety. But
right,
it'll probably be for their own safety. It's like, oh yeah, then they can just say like, it'll be one of those things where it's like, I'm going to go do this. You need to pretend like you don't know anything about it.
I mean,
to
here's
be safe.
The thing though. I think, you know, when she leaves after the Gorman massacre.
Mm-hmm.
If you leave and go join the rebellion publicly, like, would the Empire not just arrest your family and torture them as like a tool for
to get you back if they really wanted you? Yeah,
right.
Yeah, I don't know. Your family goes into hiding, or your family is like,
yeah,
tries to cooperate in some way. I don't know, but or fake cooperate.
Yeah, but even if they were cooperating, it's like I don't think it's like even if they were, I don't think they let you leave. You know,
no.
So
no, that's true.
Anyway.
We shall see.
So Tay arrives, our new favorite banker. Several months have passed at this point. He's been around a lot lately. There's an exchange of some pleasantries. Again, I love the dialogue, the pleasantries dialogue. There's kind of like just these kind of backhanded compliments, these kind of, it's just so, I love it. Basically these weasel word, nothing sentences.
It's
fascinating. They quickly get back to talking about, you know, the real work. So there's new banking regulations that the Empire's imposed. They're making things more difficult. She's trying to move more money, but she's concerned about the 400,000 that she's already, you know, quote unquote, moved. But he's telling, you know, don't worry about it. We'll make it work. So a little bit of side work there. He's obviously, you know, this is just confirmation that he agreed to go along with a plan from last week. The party continues and we run into her angsty daughter again, and Mon Mothma continues to do her glad handing for votes, because I guess that's the whole idea here, is to kind of just, and we know this happens in real life too. You throw these little events and it's just to kind of gear people to your cause. And this is
networking.
It helps all the quote, the Emperor's latest overreach, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which leads into a very, I think one of the most fascinating exchanges in the whole episode. And ties into that conversation about things that might hit a little too close to home for some. As there's a bunch of these senators or elites talking about, and they discuss Palpatine, and they say they're talking about how he's kind of quick to react, a little bit overbearing, blustery, and I And I love the line where he's like, he says what he means, right? Which is, I think that this is a direct kind of correlation line to Trump and that type of politics, which is to say, you know, he says what he means. And she's like, well, what does he mean? What is public order? Right. And then they start, and these are real debates that real people have. And that's why I think that's why this part of this episode is so good, which is like this, there's always a balance that people try to strike in their mind between order and freedom and how much is too much. And we talked about this kind of the trade-off here and this kind of idea of how much protection is enough. And then this one, the one person chimes in, it's like, well, we already know what not enough looks like, right? It's like, really, like, do you really feel like you were threatened by the Aldani situation, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, and then you get the classic line, if you're not doing nothing, if you're doing nothing wrong, there's nothing to fear, which of course is an extremely slippery slope, right?
Yes.
Mothma's response to that is, well, you know, what worries me is your definition of what's wrong, right?
Yes, exactly.
And so like all this stuff is just, I just think it's just, it's on the nose, but it's on the nose in a way that feels organic to, hey, they just passed a bill that has a lot of implications on.
Well, yeah. It's like the sentences are insane, right? Like these sentences are going from 6 months to 6 years. So that's pretty extreme. And I think that, you know, that's exactly what they're talking about here. And then, yeah, you get the people being like, well, don't do anything wrong. It's like, yeah, but we've just seen firsthand, like that some people haven't done anything wrong. And it's just and been implied or assumed or right. Yeah. So, but yeah, it's a very upper class thing to be like, oh, well, just don't worry about it. Like it's only worrisome if you're doing something wrong. It's like, yeah, but like the people being discriminated against are the ones that are dealing with it, not you.
Exactly. And this,
so you wouldn't be scared.
Right. You cut back to the prison and you see these people being killed for nothing. But it's just a really cool way to show that the kind of distinction there. I also like how Palpatine is referenced kind of over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And his influence is obviously very apparent. His name comes up constantly.
I also very much like that it's like they're not all like 100% we love Palpatine either. Like they are discussing, like these are people having like a debate and they're having like a political debate, and it's not like everybody except Mon saying that he's the greatest and the best. Like they're like, he's a little rash and he's a little this, and you know, they are
willing to put up with it. Right?
Yes, exactly.
That's the deal, right? They're not they're not uncomfortable enough. They don't see the issues enough to care. And I think that's the kind of the point, right? That these people have been so blinded by their own privilege.
Yeah, because they're just like, well, I still have money and I'm fancy, so it doesn't really matter. Nothing's changed for me.
Yeah, exactly. but again, we also never see him. Like, we don't see him on any like news thing. We don't see him on any poster.
Hollow
is like,
nothing.
Yeah, exactly. Or cut to him in his office or anything. It's like, you know, he's obviously having meetings, but you know, we never see those things. I would like to see that. So
they can't afford Ian McDiermott, but
yes, they can. Yes, they can. I hope he's on. He better be on this show. I really hope he is. If they can afford,
Forrest Whitaker.
What's it? Well, Forrest Whitaker, or who's the guy I was talking about before? Andy Serkis.
Then they can
afford Ian McDiermott. What else is Ian McDiermott doing?
Yeah,
what
true.
Other thing have you ever seen him in? So
being old.
Yeah. So finally, Mothma is asked about, there's this kind of fun kind of nothing exchange about how much time they spend looking out the window. And this is an analogy to the fact that the people who aren't as high class as them don't have these types of views out their window, right? And then they get this line about how, you know, one forgets to savor the things that are familiar, right? Which I guess is a line, and she's trying to talk to her husband or send him a signal about how their marriage is kind of falling apart, because they talk about their marriage and how it was like a preset marriage. They were married at 15. She was a senator by 16.
Crazy.
Isn't that crazy? 16.
Yeah. I'm like more worried about the being married at 15 part. I was like, oh God, like how?
Well, both things.
Yeah.
But it's a traditional Trandrillin type thing.
Yes, right? Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And then we find out that Tay had to leave early, and then we last see Mothma, she's Mon, I guess, if just the single thing. She's walking away with a very kind of like concerned look on her face.
Right.
Any thoughts on this dinner party slash cocktail event?
I just do want to say that like the costuming was amazing again.
Yes.
For this. Like, ugh,
I
like,
know.
Ugh. Every time, especially Mon's outfits, I'm like, I would wear that. Like, that's beautiful. Like, I want a fancy party to go to that I can wear that.
I want a fancy Star Wars party. I kind of like, what's her husband's name again? I kind of like,
I don't know,
his little get up. His kind of like,
oh, I thought you meant his ponytail. And I was like,
no, not his ponytail. No.
But I mean, like the costuming is beautiful. Like everybody dressed at these parties is like, it's gorgeous. Perrin. But
yeah. I like his like robes. I think they're cool.
Yes. It kind of just looks like he's wearing a house coat, but I mean,
yeah, which is what I love. Love a good house coat.
Yeah, all right. But no, I do just love this scene though. I think it very much, it's the contrast between like what the real life people who are going through that are getting incarcerated versus like what the higher ups actually think about it and the fancy people. So it's like, it's interesting. I like seeing this fancy world and their whatever mild mannered debates about, you know,
right.
topics, but yeah.
Yeah. But again, it's just kind of giving us that comparison between them and the low lifes.
Exactly.
The low lifes being, not the best term, probably. All right. So, Ferrix slash Luthen, we catch up with Bix. And this is interesting because I wasn't expecting to see these guys this
episode. No, me neither.
Bix is trying to take care of Andor's mom. She fell, apparently, and isn't feeling very well. Brasso comes to help someone we haven't seen since, like, I don't know how long ago. It's been a long time since we've seen
the second episode.
Bix and Brasso have a chat. Marva is obsessed, apparently. So Marva, being Andor's mom, is obsessed with troopers and is investigating tunnels under the hotel. She says that she's a rebel. And the way that she says that she's a rebel, like with this like big smile on her face, I think is very cute. The way Bix says that.
Yeah.
He's kind of proud of her, you know? Anyway, they kind of agreed. Like, she's like, yeah, you know, you don't have to do this. You don't have to take care of her. She's not your mom. The other person, you know, she says the same thing. It's like, well, she's not your mom either. And then they kind of say like, well, what about like an old, like a care home, which I guess I assume what the Daughters of Ferrix, I assume that that's what it is.
I don't think so, because they said that, I think it's something else. It's like a different type of like group. Cause I don't know, when I hear like the Daughters of Ferrix, yeah, that she's the past president of the Daughters of Ferrix. To me, that sounds like it might be more of like a group that either does some philanthropy or helps our people, or is like, I don't know, maybe they're like cool warriors or something, or I don't know. I just got more of a cool vibe from that, like a sorority.
I think sorority is probably the best comparison.
Yeah, like something like that is kind of
someone who can take care of her, right?
Yeah.
And anyway, they both agree that they don't know where Cassian is, and then that we cut to Vel and Cinta, who are now also on Ferrix. Mm-hmm. And I guess Cinta had no trouble getting off Aldani, which is, I guess, good to see, but we didn't see that. They're watching them, trying to find Andor, right? And Cinta is going to rent a room down the street so she has a like closer view. And they talk about how, well, they can't stay together because it would draw too much attention. What did you make of that? Do you think it's because they're kind of a queer couple and that's frowned upon in the galaxy, or...
No, I thought it was just because they're outsiders. So it's like, if there's two outsiders, that's a little bit more, like that. People suspicious. Are going to clock that a little bit more suspicious than just one. I didn't think it had anything to do with like them and their relationship or anything.
So where is Vel? I mean, they talk about the relationship here, right? They talk about how, you know, I think this line is so good where she's like, it's like, well, what did you tell them? Like, who did you tell them you are? She's like, well, maybe I told them I'm a rich girl running away from her family, which I guess is supposed to be a dig at Vel.
Vel, that's what I picked up on. Yeah.
A rich girl who's running away from her family. So I think that's really cool that we get that kind of backstory fleshed out.
Well, and I'm assuming they, Star Wars doesn't just like drop lines like that for no reason. Like, eventually that's probably going to see probably Vel and like where she comes from or her family or who they are. So that's very interesting to me, because it'll be cool if it's someone like notable that, you know.
Yeah. But hey, that's not that's not this kind of show. It has.
No, I know. But I just mean like not necessarily like somebody like it's not gonna be like Bail Organa, but you know what I mean? Like, it's like, it'd be cool if she has a family that's very much like pro empire, right? And I'm assuming that that's why she's just like trying to estrange herself from them or whatever. But
right.
Yeah, I thought that was a very, I didn't catch that the first time I watched it. I caught it the second time. I was like, oh, that's cool. I'm like, I wonder what that's all about. So it's intriguing for her character.
Yeah, it's just more, you know, character work, and it's good.
Yeah.
It also talks, and the whole point is that, like, they're talking about how their relationship comes second to the mission. Cinta is a true believer, right? The mission comes first, they get what's left. And, you know, we even see that she's, like, up all night, like, staring out the window at Andor's mom's house. So I just think that that's really cool. And by the way, I like that they put the vines on her house so that it's distinct enough, so you, when you see it, you know exactly. So I guess we don't know where Vel is staying, but I guess somewhere nearby, maybe in a neighboring town or something. Bix heads to the scrapyard because she's worried about her what's her name again?
Marva.
She's worried about Marva. And she wants to kind of contact Luthen to see if they can find Andor, right? Because Cassian's the one who's going to be most concerned about that. Meanwhile, of course, he couldn't do anything about it even if he wanted to, but
no.
They don't know that. So she goes to the scrapyard to use the secret radio. She sends a message to Luthen, and at Luthen's shop, we see that they have received the message and that, you know, they agree, essentially, Luthen and Clea agree to shut it down, right? They're like, we can't.
Yeah.
Luthen, look, he's tempted. He's like, he wants to find out where Andor is. He wants to know. He's like, she knows more, but like, I love how Clea's like, they're asking us. Why would, what information are they going to have?
Yeah. Like, she doesn't have any other info. Like, it's, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, they decide they're going to shut it down. I just like this whole exchange with Clea where she's like, you're slipping. You know, we can't answer this. We need to shut it down. You know, Luthen feels like he made a mistake with Andor. Of course, the ISB agree. They feel like he made his first mistake with Andor. The way that he keeps saying, I'm not slipping. It's interesting because I think he has a lot of self doubt there. And also, he is slipping because he's not in the later Star Wars stuff, so likely he doesn't make it out of the series.
Oh yeah, he's gonna do something. Yeah.
Well, he's rushing, right? He's trying to make things happen maybe more quickly than they should. So they shut down the Ferrix code. This pisses off Bix, who keeps trying to send out another signal, and we get another cool overhead shot as she tries that again. We also quickly get a look at Luthen leaving on a ship to Segra Milo, a planet we've never seen or heard of before. So we get a nice little crossfade between Cinta and Vel. Vel is on a train or something off to somewhere else. And Cinta is watching Marva's house. But again, this kind of together but separate, the crossfade thing was kind of cool. And then the next day, we see a crowd around Pax Yard, that's the scrapyard that she was at, Bix was at last night. That's where the radio is. The Empire came in and arrested him and took him to the hotel. Bix feels guilty, but as the Empire is clearing the street, they recognize her and she makes a run for it. What did you make of these last couple scenes here?
Just from whatever kind of happens later, it's like the Empire is very much closing in on like known associates of Cassian and all that. And I don't know if they like picked up on the fact that Bix sent some sort of transmission or not, or if they, because, you know, their Imperials can do that with comms and whatnot.
I think he's just associate of Andor. I think that's
the okay. Idea. Yeah, I wasn't too sure whether they were there just because of being associates or whether it was because she sent that message. Like,
well, I think the reason they came to arrest him was because the message was sent from his establishment.
Right, yes.
And the reason they clock her is either she gave up or because they were already looking for her
Exactly. Yeah.
The hunt for Andor.
Yeah.
So we see then Luthen arrive at Segra Milo, and this is probably the best scene in the episode.
Yeah.
And we see a shot of the proto X-wing, and that masked dude with the tubes out of his face with the long rifle.
Two tubes.
Like, oh. Yeah, two tubes out of his face. And I knew exactly what
that's
we were
his
about
name.
To oh, that's his name?
Yeah.
No, it's not. No,
yes.
It's not. That's his like actual name or a nickname or like that's just what
look
people call
it. It up.
Oh, yeah, two tubes. Aiden Cook, two tubes.
Yeah. I was like, that's his actual name is two tubes. So
that's
shut
crazy.
It.
Okay. My
yeah,
bad.
It's like
okay.
something yeah. two tubes, but yeah.
Well, anyway, that's hilarious. I hope he gets a real name at some point. And we see two tubes and I was like, oh shit. We're gonna see some Saw Gerrera action, and we do. And I was so stoked to see it. Were you? How were you?
Yeah.
How, what was your feelings here when we saw two tubes and everything?
I got pumped. I was like, oh shit! I was like, here comes. I figured we were gonna see Saw at some point in yeah, the series. Same. I was like, it's like yeah, like he's got to come into this because he fits with this whole web of like rebel activity and some of it being. A lot more destructive than others and some of it being way more contained and like people being loose cannons. So like Luthen and Saw fit very well together as like they're both kind of doing their own thing and they're both loose cannons. And yeah, I mean like we're kind of just seeing the fallout from this rebel activity as well right now. So we're seeing the rebellion get built, but we're also seeing like all the fallout that happens every time they gain like a win, right? So yeah, I was just pumped to see him. I was like, oh great, we're going to get another crazy person added into the mix.
He is a crazy person and it's great to see it. I'd like to have this, they first by both denying the Aldani job, right?
Yeah.
And they're just like, well, that's someone that, so, you know, that's what someone would say if they did it. And it's like, well, that's what you would say if you were trying to say that I did it. And then I love what the line where he's like, well, you're saying everything that would convince me you were the one who did it. And I think it's so funny. And they're like, well, let's just agree it was a masterpiece, which I'm sure Luthen, I'm sure that tickled him.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Exchange. So, so he arrives under the guise of selling some gear, right? He's got drive adapters, some Steerguard targeting deflectors. And the cost, the price of that equipment is to meet with someone named Anto Grieger. And this is another kind of rebel cell who's making a play at another Imperial installation. And he wants Saw to work with Anto because he needs Saw's air support. And more importantly, he acknowledges that they just need to generally work together more for them to, if they want to succeed, they need to pull together for the rebellion to work, right? And he talks about how oppression breeds rebellion and they need the Empire to be upset and angry so that they can kind of get the motivate people into the right place so that they can make something happen. And so I really like this because, of course, at this same time, we're dealing with, you know, the Phoenix Squadron is off doing their own thing. They've just recently learned that they're part of a larger organization that is really very separated at this point, right?
Oh, they're all over.
The time they pull together is Scarif in a real way, right?
Yes.
And, you know, we also know that Scarif, that Saw's partisans aren't really a part of the cause, right? They're still trying to do their own thing. And so I guess the funny thing, you know, we're seeing all these characters kind of change and evolve and their arc going from, you know, Andor being a non-believer to a true believer, et cetera. But Saw, there is no change. His whole his whole thing is that he is a stick in the mud, right?
Well, and I like how he just like, you know, he's going off on Luthen being like that. He's a separatist. Like, I'm not going to work with him. Like, he's still very separate about everybody. It's like, no, like I have this group. We're doing this. Like, I'm not going to work with anybody else that isn't fully on my side.
Well, so. I think he's kind of saying that, like, listen, I know where I stand, but I don't know where some of these other people stand. Mm-hmm. And even if I do know, I know that they're not aligned with my vision.
Yes.
And that means I can't work with them. You know, so I work alone. Classic line. Right.
Yeah.
He talks about these different factions. He talks about the separatists, the neo-republicans, the Gorman mm-hmm. Front, the Partisan Alliance, Sectionists, Human Cultists, Galaxy yeah. Partitionists, lost, he says. All of them lost. Yeah. What a crazy line. I love it's so Forrest Whitaker. Bravo, sir. Oh, bravo.
So good. Well, yeah. especially like it's funny to me too. Well, not funny, but like Luthen might not obviously probably doesn't know the backstory, but like Saw especially isn't gonna work with any separatists because like that's how he loses his sister in like the Clone Wars there. Right. So it's like he's got like a deep rooted hatred for separatists, like especially, but then also Empire. So like he's absolutely not gonna like fight with anybody that he doesn't think is fully after what he's after. So
right, and the question is, what is he after? And the answer is anarchy, right?
Just
and
anarchy.
So,
yeah.
So I love that. So Saw questions where you know I know where all those people stand, but where do you stand, right? Mm-hmm. Within? And I love his answers. He's like, I'm a coward. I'm someone who believes that only that if we continue to wait, continue to bicker amongst ourselves, the Empire will get too strong, and we won't be able to do anything about it. So right. his real only goal right now is to kind of like pull the team together, make something happen. And, you know, Saw says, I'm the only one with clarity of purpose. And Luthen's response, anarchy is a seductive concept and something yeah. that, you know, it's convenient for someone living in a cave to kind of spout off. So, you know, I just think it's like a very, this conversation is probably more complex than almost any conversation we've ever had in Star Wars
yeah.
about just pure like subtext and meaning perspective. I mean, we've had similar. I mean, it's similar to the kind of the Saw stuff we saw in Rogue One, but
right.
It's another level. And I just really appreciate kind of the thought that went into this. It's so cool, right? I mean, let's talk about so separatists. We know what separatists are,
right?
Right. Neo-Republicans, these are people that presumably want to return to the Republic. They want a
yes,
new Republic,
yes.
right? The Gorman Front, those are the Gormans. They're kind of off doing their own thing. The Partisan Alliance, I'm guessing that's like, it's either Saw's group himself, but not really because they call themselves the Partisans. Do they not call themselves the Partisans? I feel like Saw's Partisans
yeah,
is
I
not
thought,
a thing.
I think so.
But maybe it's,
I don't know.
Maybe it's the folks from what's his name's dad from Rebels and Bad Batch, the Twi'leks. You know, maybe it's the Twi'leks. Maybe that's what they're talking about there.
Could be, yes.
Yeah. What's his name again? The leader of that group.
Oh, Hera's dad.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cham Syndulla. Yeah, there we go. Right. Cham Syndulla. That's what it is. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm guessing that's what they're talking about. Cham. The Sectorists, I think those are people that want to break up the galaxy into sectors that are managed individually and not by some larger organization. Human right. Cultists, I'm guessing that's like the KKK of of the galaxy. And Galaxy Partitionists, I seems like it's similar to Sectorists, so I don't really know what that means. But anyway, interesting concept. So any other thoughts on this conversation with Saw?
No, I just thought it was cool. And I feel like it was a really good way to bring Saw in where it wasn't too much. Like, I liked that they didn't bring him in a way where he was like doing something grandiose just yet.
Right.
Yeah. Like, it's like, okay, yeah. Like, I kind of like that he's still that like loose cannon crazy guy off on the fringe that like no one can really control or work with. So,
well, yeah. And also, he's like, he's kind of, I like his design too. He doesn't have the tube
yes.
mask thing yet. He's kind of,
no,
still
no, he's still normal.
Human.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it just shows a larger story about the rebellion in its nascent state, which is that it's not joined on any front, really. So,
right.
It's just a really cool way to do that. All right. Final scene. Bix turns out she didn't get away. And is pulled, which is not surprising. Where are you going to go? And
yeah.
is pulled into the hotel where Dedra is with Pak, who was just tortured. Extra gross because Dedra wants Bix to see
yeah.
the tortured version of Pak.
And she just does it in such a like calculated way too.
Oh yeah, I like, love how she's like, get him out of mm-hmm. here, right after she told him
yeah.
to get him out of here. Oh
yeah.
Right?
leaves him and then makes it look like she didn't want her to see him. Like, right. It's, yeah.
Yeah.
Oof, yeah, it's that's so just kind of evil.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So we get this ominous shot of a chair, right? Typically, that means that someone's about to get tortured. I was hoping for an interrogation droid. But,
that'll be the start of the next episode. Yeah,
they get a they have a code droid for that instead. Mm-hmm. And instead of interrogation droid, you know, there's some kind of traditional Star Wars visual storytelling here, because you know, I think that you think of episode 4, New Hope, and when Leia is interrogated, you see the probe droid or the interrogation droid, wah 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 wah, and mm-hmm. then it cuts to the door, then the door slams shut. That's we get mm-hmm. that same door slam shut trick here. So yes, I thought it was very effective. And I actually kind of wish that the episode ended on that. Instead, it ends on that final scene of Andor just working away on another shift. You know, with his buds. So that's the episode. Any final thoughts?
I feel like there's just, you know, like we said kind of in the beginning, a lot going on and like a lot of really cool conversations kind of happen in this episode. So I just, yeah, we got to see a bunch of different characters and a bunch of kind of new stuff building. So. Yeah, I'm hoping we get to see some kind of prison break scene I'm hoping that. I'm hoping we get to see that in the, you know, before the end of the series. So, or this,
we will.
Whatever, a season.
He's not in prison for 6 years. We know that already.
So. Yeah, no, I know that.
Yeah, this episode is super dense. It was 48 minutes long or something like that. I don't know the exact runtime, but. It felt longer than that in a good way because
it
really had so much going on.
For the beginning of a 3-part arc episode, like I liked this one. Like I wasn't bored at all watching this one. I was like, there was enough going on to like honestly keep me engaged and entertained. And yeah, it was, yeah, I'm like, I liked it. So
yeah. I'm just continually blown away by how amazing this show is. From production design, performances, story,
honestly, yeah,
everything, writing, everything about it is like some of the best we've ever seen, and it's a delight covering this week to week because it's just so fascinating to watch. I just wish more people would be watching it. That's all. It's not getting the ratings I think it deserves, but it might get some awards love at the next Emmys.
Ooh, so that'd be cool. Be yeah,
yeah. All right. Well, on that note, I've got to run. I got still work to do. It's only 2 p.m. here in Sydney. So I'll get out of here and we'll be back next week with more Star Wars. May the Force be with you.